Well, the most highly anticipated LSU baseball season, at least as long as I can remember, has officially kicked off. And today I want to get into not exactly what we saw on the field, but what we saw that we can build upon for the future. We'll get into that plus so much more on today's edition of Locked On LSU.
You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcast. Plus, we are on YouTube as well, so you can check us out on the go. You can give it a listen. You can also give it a watch on YouTube. My name is Caroline Fenton, and I'm your host, as I am every day. You can find me on Twitter at CarolineFenton1. I appreciate y'all for hanging out. I appreciate y'all for being in here, and I also always appreciate you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Before we get into some of my takeaways from the first weekend of LSU baseball, I want to let y'all know that today's edition of Locked On LSU is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates that you want to talk to and faster. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedoncollege. Terms and conditions apply. All right, weekend one of LSU baseball is in the books. And look, this is the most highly anticipated season that I can remember in a very long time, and rightfully so. Unanimous number one team preseason, number one recruiting class, number one transfer portal class. You have some of the top talent, top prospects in the country. I mean, this team should be getting that much hype because that's just how much talent this team truly has. So with all of this hype that this team is getting, I mentioned on the podcast last week, if you're going to collect this much talent, and if you're going to get this much hype, if you're going to get this much respect from the entire college baseball world, you need to be winning a national championship. You know, when you're a unanimous number one team, for me, it is Omaha or bust. So I'm not going to look at a weekend against Western Michigan and nitpick all the nitty-gritty little details about what LSU did great, what LSU needs to work on, because, and I'm not going to get too high or too low about a sweep over Western Michigan. Really, rather, I'm not going to get too high about a sweep over Western Michigan. That's what this team needs to be doing. But it's a sweep nonetheless. LSU outscored Western Michigan 24-5 to hold any team in college baseball to 5 runs across 3 days is impressive. And that's exactly what this team looked like. They looked very impressive. So I'm not going to get too high on a sweep over Western Michigan. That's what this team should be doing. This is the number one team in the country. That's what this team should be doing, is beating their opponents and beating those opponents handedly. LSU snags the 22nd straight season opener win, which I didn't even realize that stat, but it is very impressive nonetheless. But I think more so, beyond just taking away, like just looking at the games independently, breaking down the games as they are, I think the more important thing and more pressing thing and the more important takeaways, more valuable takeaways from this weekend for me, since Western Michigan is a team that you should beat and is a team that you should beat handedly, is what did we see in the first weekend of LSU baseball that looks like they have improved from last season? Something that I mentioned on the podcast last week is what held LSU baseball back last season. And you can absolutely go find those on your preferred podcast platform. You can find that on YouTube. You can find them wherever you listen to Locked On LSU. You can go back and listen to that. But I mentioned that one of LSU's biggest problems, which I think anybody who watched any LSU baseball last year, especially the final games of the season against Southern Miss, is the starting pitching was an issue. Bullpen depth was an issue. So that's exactly how I'm going to approach the first part of the season before you get into conference play. Whenever you might have a lighter schedule, is how did the things that held this team back last year, how do those look this year? So let's look at starting pitching, because that was a problem for LSU. Top to bottom, starting pitching, bullpen, relievers, you name it. It just, depth was an issue. Reliable arms were an issue. So It was like a Paul Skeens on Friday night. It was a 10-0 win for LSU on Friday night. Paul Skeens made his first start in an LSU uniform, of course, transferring in from Air Force. He went six innings, allowed three hits, walked one, struck out 12. Paul Skeens had just about as good of a performance as you could ever ask for from any of your starters. He was dominant. Looked so incredibly dominant, looked so incredibly in control of the mound. He was the most strikeouts for an LSU pitcher in almost 30 years. 12 strikeouts, y'all. Think about that. 12 strikeouts in six innings. That's super impressive. He earned himself SEC Player of the Year honors. Just really, really solid starting stuff from Paul Skeens. This was Jay Johnson on Paul Skeens' first starting performance as an LSU Tiger.
Yeah, it was a great job by Paul, and that's what we've seen since he's been here. I mean, he closed the game out against my team when he was a freshman, so I'd seen that before. And that's what we brought him here for. And I expect I don't know if he'll have whatever many punch outs he did, but it was 1-2 to every hitter, and just the strike zone pressure was phenomenal.
And that's exactly what we saw from Paul Skeens on Friday night. Was it's just, I mean, command of the game the entire time, command of his pitches the entire time he was out there. So just like Jay Johnson mentioned, you're not going to see a six inning, 12 strikeout performance from Paul Skeens night in and night out. That'd be great, but you're not going to get that night in and night out. But what we did get was reassurance, and we saw with our own two eyes, the own proof, that Paul Skeens, a guy that Jay Johnson seeked out to help this bullpen, to bolster up this starting rotation, that's coming to fruition, and that's coming to fruition in week one. That's important. So that's been has been very key. Paul Skeens coming out in his first start, and that already makes you feel better about this starting rotation than you did last year. And then also, another guy that we saw on Friday night who I think you could start to see in the starting rotation was Christian Little, who hit two innings, allowed zero hits, walked none, and struck out three. So just that microcosm of Friday night, you saw a solid starter and you saw a solid relief pitcher that could come in and potentially earn a spot in that starting rotation as well, whether that's in the weekend rotation, whether that's your middle of the week guys. These are really two solid pitchers who came into LSU via the transfer portal. And that was Jay Johnson's entire purpose of seeking out these two players in Paul Skeens and Christian Little. And then also you add on the rest of the transfer group as well. But it was to help out one of those weak spots from last year, and that being the bullpen. A guy that is not new to LSU, came to LSU from Arizona this last year, who had a good day on Saturday, was Riley Cooper. The lefty pitched for five innings, walked two, struck out seven, and a 5-3 win, where it was a game where LSU struggled a bit offensively. But Riley Cooper had a solid day. And then on Sunday, you saw a new newcomer, not through the transfer portal, but a true freshman in Chase Shores. It was pretty surprising to me to see him listed in the starting rotation as your Sunday guy. He went 3 1/3 innings, allowed two hits, one run, two walks, and struck out two. I think with Chase Shores, you saw him struggle a little bit. You did. You know, he obviously looked like a guy who had some jitters to work through, and that's totally understandable in his first college start. So the question is, what are you going to do to continue to shake off that rust to get him more acclimated into the college game? Because right now in this game on Sunday, it was a 9-2 win. It didn't hurt you. But moving forward, if Chase Shores is going to be a permanent part of the starting rotation, and I don't know if that's Jay Johnson's MO or his intention moving forward. But, you know, Chase Shores is going to have to get acclimated into the college game. The only way that he can do that is getting in-game experience. So he looked promising. I could see the talent, but also still has some stuff to work on. Ty Floyd was credited with the win on Sunday. He came in and looked really impressive. He pitched for just about three innings, struck out four, had a solid day. I think Ty Floyd is another one that came in relief, but you can also see him potentially work his way up into the starting rotation. So one of the biggest areas of concern for me and probably you last year, pitching depth, starting pitching, and bullpen depth. And I think just in those three games, based off of the starters and the guys who came in relief, It already looks better. Now, it's only one weekend, but we can only work with what we've got. And so far, the pitching that we saw, starters and relievers, it's promising. You can absolutely tell that Jay Johnson made pitching a priority, like he said it was going to be. And the press conference after LSU lost to Southern Miss this past season, he said it was going to be a priority of his. And you could tell in the offseason that is one thing that he worked on, considering there are several new faces that we saw on the mound over the weekend that looked pretty good. But coming up next, one name that was really highly lauded going into this season, one name that I look to be a guy that this LSU baseball team could rely on a whole lot, both offensively and defensively, is he not going to be available to be relied upon moving forward? I want to get into that coming up next. Well, thanks again for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Make sure that you check out our brand new podcast, Locked On College Basketball. It's got everything that you need to know about college basketball all in one place. Plus, you can hear from big name experts, insiders, coaches, and players. Locked On College Basketball, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. So one name, one guy that I was so excited about going into this season was Tommy White. Because Tommy White absolutely set the college baseball world by storm last year when he was with NC State. I mean, offensively, he was lights out, one of the best sluggers in the nation, and defensively as well. Always could consistently make plays, always was one of those guys you could count on. So when LSU got there, he was a guy that even before the transfer portal was open, like last season, just being a college baseball fan or watching some of the top teams in the country, which NC State was, I always admired Tommy White. I always thought he was just such a fun player to watch. I mean, how could you not think so whenever he's, you know, offensive fireworks every time he comes up to bat? So whenever LSU acquired Tommy White, I was so excited because I talk about Jay Johnson putting in work in the offseason to address positions of need. Jay Johnson also addressed positions that weren't of need, but found pieces to make those strong pieces even stronger. And that was LSU's offense this past year, only getting bolstered and only getting better by adding in a Tommy White. So you can only imagine how devastated I was whenever I saw Tommy White leave the game on Friday night with an injury. Friday afternoon. I keep saying Friday night. I mean Friday afternoon. It's just, you know, Friday night at the box is just instilled in my brain, and 3 o'clock first pitch is kind of new to all of us. So Tommy White leaves the game early on Friday in the first inning, really. So he was taken out at first. In the first inning, he was diving to first. And he got up grabbing his hand, his wrist. Like initially when he got up, I thought it was a wrist. I thought it was his hand. I thought the first baseman maybe potentially stepped on his hand. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, no, like a broken finger or a broken wrist. That's kind of what it looked like, kind of his body language coming off the field. He was grabbing his forearm with his hand elevated a bit. So I thought it was a hand or a wrist issue. I didn't really see exactly what happened when he was sliding back into first base. But we got an update from Jay Johnson after the game. It wasn't a hand, it wasn't a wrist, but this was Jay Johnson with his Tommy White update after Friday night.
I don't think it was as bad as maybe it looked, but I don't know. I don't think he'll play tomorrow. I think he's okay.
So. Do you know what he had before?
Yeah, he had a thing last year, very similar with the shoulder. So, but you don't notice it because, I mean, he's played such good defense, strong throwing arm, and hits first baseman in the face every time. So, I think it's probably as positive as it could be. But I don't know everything either. You know, as a coach, sometimes you got to move on to the next play, and I think it was in the first inning. And so, I think it's not bad, but we'll see.
So it was a shoulder?
Shoulder, yeah.
Okay. So it was a shoulder. It was a shoulder issue after all. Tommy White was taken out on Friday. Jay Johnson provided another update after the game on Sunday. He said that he is better, that he's not going to be out for much longer. So that is encouraging to hear. Is the fact that Tommy White, it's not a season-ending injury. It's not an injury that's going to require surgery. I'm probably thinking it's just something got tweaked. it's a little uncomfortable. Maybe it's a nerve. Maybe it's a muscle pull, something along those lines that it might keep you out for a little bit because it's really uncomfortable, but you can expect Tommy White to be back in the lineup sooner rather than later. So that's the encouraging thing. The discouraging thing is this isn't the first time that Tommy White has been struggling with a shoulder injury or has missed time due to a shoulder injury. Go back to 2022. He was out just over a week when he was at NC State at late April going into May in ACC conference play. Tommy White was out for about a week, almost 2 weeks with a shoulder injury. So that's the discouraging thing, is that this is kind of a repeated injury. Of course, an injury that probably got re-aggravated just by that slide. But this isn't something that's necessarily new. And that's always something that I always get very leery of, is those nagging injuries that always seem to creep their way back in, whether that's, you know, a weird fluky thing like what we saw on Friday night, whether that's overusage. It's just something that we're going to have to continue to keep an eye on, especially a guy. He uses that shoulder a lot, how important that shoulder really is to Tommy White's game. So that's the discouraging thing. But another encouraging thing as well is he's been able to work through it in the past, where, you know, if you're out a week, less than 2 weeks, that's not devastating to your season. That's ideally only one weekend series and maybe a midweek game, maybe two if you're really unlucky. So that's not, you know, a team altering, season ending sort of injury that Tommy White was dealing with. At least last year, he was able to come back, put in the work that he needed to do to get back to 100%, and was able to work through it. So I think that there are two sides of that. It's incredibly discouraging to lose a guy like that so early in the season. It's not very encouraging to see a guy have a repeat injury, but it is encouraging to see, one, that he's worked through it in the past, and two, that he's going to be fine. He's going to be okay. And I think the other thing too, if you want to look at the glass half full, if you are going to lose, you never want to lose your best players ever in any sport, period. That's just common sense. That was one thing that I highlighted on the podcast last week, of one thing that could hold this team back. And it's one thing that's completely out of your power, is if this team goes through, you know, just a multitude of injuries and gets bitten by the injury bug, that's exactly what holds you back. But the encouraging thing is it's so early in the season, and LSU has a fairly favorable schedule over the first month or so. Of course, not very encouraging looking at the Round Rock this weekend. Taking on Texas is just a really solid team. But I think overall, you know, ahead of conference play and so far ahead of conference play, you can probably expect Tommy White to be back and ready for that first series against Texas A&M. So that's another thing, is it's early. You know, he's going to heal. You don't, knock on wood, you shouldn't need Tommy White and all of these games moving forward, and the games that he may be out for, you shouldn't need him in order to get by. Of course, you always want your top players, but, you know, that's one thing, is at least it's, you know, you got Southern coming up on Tuesday. That's a game that LSU should win with Tommy White or not. But he was batting cleanup on Friday night. He's a fourth hole hitter. I think that speaks volumes about him, and I think that's where I expected him to be anyways, in that top spot in the lineup. So we'll continue to keep an eye on Tommy White and that injury. Again, I'm not overly concerned about it, just something that we'll be looking at moving forward. But coming up next, I think we all feel really, you should feel good. You should feel encouraged about LSU baseball. It came out today, all of the rankings. LSU is still in that top spot in the country, as it should be. LSU did nothing to prove that they aren't the best team in the country. There's another team that I think that we just need to come to terms with, and it's not as encouraging or it's not as exciting of a conversation as talking about LSU baseball was this past weekend. We'll get into that coming up next. But before we do that, I want to tell you about Built Bar. Because if you're like me and you have a sweet tooth and you love to indulge in delicious treats, but you don't want to sacrifice all the fat and all the calories, then you've got to check out Built Bar. So my goal is to eat a little bit healthier this year, and I have a trip to the beach coming up next month, and I want to feel good when I'm in, you know, when I'm on the beach, when I'm wearing dresses and shorts, and I want to look good doing it. And Built Bar really helps with being healthy because it's actually tasty. They're so delicious, and you won't even think that they're good for you because they are so delicious. They're covered in 100% real chocolate. It's 100% real chocolate, I promise. It is so good. And they come in candy bar-esque flavors. They're so delicious. Churro is one of them. Peanut butter brownie, which is one of my favorites. Peanut butter is one of my weaknesses. And coconut almond as well, which is so delicious. I'm not sure how Built Bar does it, but like all the Built Bars taste that good. And all of them taste like a candy bar. But they also have great macros too. Only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and a whopping 17 grams of protein. So what I like to do is I'll throw a Built Bar in my bag at the beginning of the day. I'll munch on it throughout the day as I get hungrier, as I get some of those sweetness cravings, and it keeps me full for hours, keeps me moving for hours. And now you don't have to wait around to get a box. I've been telling you about ordering your Built Bars at Built.com, but now you can get them at your local Walmart. If you go to the pharmacy section, you can grab a box of Built Bars. You can pick up a 4-bar box of cookies and cream, double chocolate, or the coconut puffs. But if a Sam's Club is closer to you, you can go to a Sam's Club too. You can pick up a 13-bar box with the hit flavors brownie batter and churro. You can thank me later. So I think you step away from weekend one of LSU baseball and you feel good about it. Like I mentioned, a sweep over Western Michigan doesn't necessarily make you go from super, super high about this team to even higher. It's just simply you took care of business and you beat a team that you should have beaten. And it's good. You should have. You're still the number one team in the country because you deserve it. Because you went out there and you played like the number one team in the country. You know, you had maybe some of your blunders, maybe offensively on Saturday, you didn't have the biggest day. Maybe Sunday, we saw some things from Chase Shores that could be improved upon. Overall, LSU still looks like a pretty damn good team because they are a pretty damn good team. But I think as we get so high on baseball, rightfully so, I think we need to start being really realistic about this basketball team. If we haven't already been realistic about this basketball team, I've said for weeks, you know, maybe this team just is what it is. And I don't think there's anything that this basketball team could do, you know, and I say that now. I'm thinking of all the things this basketball could do to put Matt McMahon potentially on the hot seat. But there's nothing that this team could do on the court, I believe, that would put Matt McMahon's job in jeopardy. We understood that this was going to be a slow process. That this was going to be a difficult and honestly probably painful process, rebuilding this LSU basketball team. Last April, every single scholarship player left. Matt McMahon gets hired and he is forced to put together a team with all of the pieces that he possibly could. And that's not easy to do, especially when you know there's probably NCAA violations looming around this program. We knew it wasn't going to be easy and it wasn't going to be pretty. But I think at the beginning of the season, when LSU played really well and in non-conference play, I think maybe that shielded us or blinded us a little bit from the reality of this team. First game of SEC play, LSU beats a top 10 team in Arkansas. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this team's actually really good. You know, that's a statement win against a top 10 team, a really solid Arkansas team that went far in the tournament this last year. You know, maybe, you know, all this talk about being patient with LSU basketball, maybe we don't even have to be that patient. But then we quickly learned that no. It will require a lot of patience. And I looked at the schedule. I saw a couple of games, one against Georgia, one against South Carolina, as LSU was stringing together 7, 8, 9, 10 consecutive SEC losses. I looked at those two games to say, okay, that's your final opportunity to pick up a second conference win. Of course, a pretty, you know, a rough ending to a Georgia game that was really, really close down to the wire. And I said, okay, you have to beat South Carolina because South Carolina is right there down at the bottom with you. If you're going to pick up two wins in the SEC, which isn't much, you know, it isn't going to change much about your thought process about this team, but it's at least going to create a little bit of momentum moving forward. You're going to have to beat South Carolina because that's really probably the only opportunity that you have left on your schedule to pick up another win. And it didn't. LSU basketball falls to South Carolina 82-73 over the weekend. And there were some really solid individual performances. Like we've seen throughout the season, is you might see some really solid individual performances. You might see some really solid performances in the second half of the game, but slow starts just held this team back. It's really, you know, each game has its own downfall. And again against South Carolina, it was a slow start. You know, it was a bad first half from this team. And I think, you know, I have come to terms with the fact that this team is going to win one game in conference play. But that's okay. Like I said, this is going to be a slow build with Matt McMahon. We need to give Matt McMahon our patience. We need to give Matt McMahon time. Of course, there does come a time and a time and a place when patience runs out. That's totally fair. There comes a time and a place when, okay, you need to start rebuilding. Like, you need to start showing us that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that you are making progress for this team. That's not going to happen right now. It's not. You know, I thought that maybe it could by the end of the season, that you could start to see this team string wins together. Wouldn't be a tournament team, wouldn't make a run in the SEC tournament, but at least could improve week over week over week. And I really do think this team has improved week over week over week. Like that second half against Texas A&M, offensively, they looked great. It just wasn't enough to overcome a bad first half. So while we may have seen some little changes here and there, overall, the same issues persist. Slow starts, turnovers, penalties, poor defense. We've seen it all from this team. So I have come to terms with the fact that this team is going to win one game in conference play. Matt McMahon's job is safe, as it should be. I'm giving him time. That's not something that a lot of coaches, really at any level, especially, you know, college and the professional level, coaches don't really always get a whole lot of time. But that's what Matt McMahon deserves, is a little bit of time and some patience. And that's what I'm giving him this year. You win one conference game, man, that's brutal. It's been really tough to watch this game, this team sometimes. But I'm looking ahead to next year. How can you bring in a solid recruiting class? How can you continue to build this team through the transfer portal? And how can you start to build upon what you've done? And I know it might sound pretty pathetic that I'm already looking ahead to next year before this season has even ended, but that's where we're at with this team. You know, that's where we're at. Didn't win against South Carolina, and now you've got Vanderbilt, who has been red hot. They've won 5 games in a row, beat Auburn over the weekend. You've got Ole Miss, Mizzou, and Florida. You know, those 4 teams, they're not great teams. Like, they're not at the top of the conference, but those are all teams that I don't see this team beating. I'm just being realistic there. But that's going to do it for me today. Thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. And for your second listen, check out our brand new podcast, the Locked On College Basketball Podcast. Experts Isaac Shade and Andy Patton bring you everything that you need to know on and off the court. Plus, you can hear from big-name experts, coaches, and players throughout the basketball landscape. Locked On College Basketball, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.